Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the 28th of October, 2019. It's almost Halloween. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host, and this is the Daily Daily Caller podcast for another Monday. Those Mondays that just keep on a-coming, don't they? Oh, man. So much to get to. So much to go through. So busy, busy weekend. We'll get to as much of it as we humanly possibly can in the next hour. Do we have? Yeah, we do. If you want to win, see, it's a Monday. I've got a bad case of the Mondays. If you want to enter to win a copy of The War on History by Jarrett Stepman, as many of you already have tried, email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, D-E-R-E-K, and let me know that that is what you want to do, and I will enter you into the drawing. That drawing will be conducted Thursday evening, so you'll find out Friday. You don't have to wait all that long. You'll find out the day after Halloween, after your either sugar rush or diabetic coma, whatever it is, floats your boat on Halloween. So do that. We're also, I already announced it, so I guess I can't really jinx it any more than I already have. I am scheduled to sit down with David Limbaugh, the great David Limbaugh, a good friend, this Thursday for Friday's show to talk about his new book, which is very, I always love talking with David whenever he's in town. So I'm very much looking forward to that as well. And if you have questions for David, you can email me. I'd ask that you do it in a separate email with like David Limbaugh question in the subject line. Can't guarantee that I'll get to it. I'm not sure how much time I'm going to have with David in studio. His book comes out Tuesday. When your book comes out, your world is just being dragged around by other people for 2 weeks. So I'll do my best to address that. But it's going to be great to see David again. We've got, of course, the head of ISIS was killed over the weekend. Hell just got one more resident, so that's awfully nice. Actually, a bunch of residents. We have the president's audio of it. That's not really the story. The Democrats being upset is the story. The media being upset is the story. The way that this was framed by the media is a new level of ridiculousness that you're not going to believe unless you've been paying attention. You've been paying close attention. You've been listening to this show. It won't surprise you all that much. And then at the end of the program, I will have, some of you already know the news, I will have an announcement about a job I took that won't impact this show one bit. So don't worry. It's just another way. If you sit there and you think, 1 hour of Derek isn't enough, I need 3 more hours. Well, I'll tell you how you can get 3 more hours starting 1 week from today. But before we get into any of that stuff, any of it, let's talk about our wonderful sponsor, Ancient Life Oil. Look, I'm a firm believer that when you're healthy, you're happy. I was sick as a dog last week. I'm not sick as a dog now, so I'm happy. That's how it works. That's why I use CBD oil from AncientLifeOil.com. It's a natural remedy made with nothing but the purest ingredients and blended with coconut and hemp oil. I'm telling you, it's a home run hitter for your health. I was a skeptic, but now I see why it's so popular. I feel great. Ancient Life Oil is non-psychoactive, meaning it provides you with all of the benefits without the high. Sorry. I encourage you to do your own research. Look, just search CBD oil benefits. See what comes up there. You'll find out why tens of thousands of your fellow Americans have made CBD oil a regular part of their healthy routine. It's an incredible growth industry for a reason. If you're ready to live your best life, go to AncientLifeOil.com now, the trusted source for high-quality CBD oil. And CIENTLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Use the promo code Derek at checkout. You get free shipping. Look, those little aches, those pains, those things that bother you, the stress, it helps in ways that I can't understand. I don't even want to try to explain. Just know that the stuff works. Do your own research and then go to AncientLifeOil.com. Promo code Derek at checkout and you get free shipping. Okay. Somebody who got free shipping to hell this weekend was Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the head of ISIS, the head and founder of ISIS. Yes, we finally got the son of a bitch, and he is dead. Apparently, he blew himself up in an escape tunnel that was dead-ended. I'm not really sure. Look, I know that the Islamic terror world is pretty bass-ackwards. But I didn't think that they were so far backwards that they didn't understand what an escape tunnel is supposed to do. Supposed to have another end. Supposed to, you know, help you escape. But apparently he went down the tunnel that was still under, maybe contracted with government work or union work. And it was just, you know, they were on vacation or something. So he ended up getting cornered in a raid in northern Syria by our troops. And blew himself and three of his kids up because that's how you love your kids, apparently. If you're an Islamic terrorist known for personally raping a bunch of women, including an American, and beheading people and just being an all-around scumbag. It couldn't have happened to a more deserving guy that he blew up and took some of his kids with him. And I think that's all right. A lot of people on social media were going, oh man, what about his children? I'm not really sure that his children would have exactly grown up to be productive members of society. Call me cynical, call me crazy. I also don't think his kids, I don't think he was carrying infants in his arms. But this is the way of the terrorist. Let him blow himself up. Save us the cost of the bullet. I'm down with it. They took his, pieces of him, shall we say, tested it and confirmed that it was him and that it is him no more. And the world is a better place. Before we get to the media reaction of it, let's listen to the President of the United States lay this case out and tell the American. It was kind of, we knew it was coming on Saturday night. The president tweeted something big coming tomorrow. And then there was a press conference scheduled for 9 a.m. on Sunday, which I'm hoping most people slept through. 9 a.m. on the East Coast is 3 a.m. on the West Coast. Maybe some people were still up. They got a nice little, in addition to waking up with a hangover, they got to wake up with a nice thought of a terrorist leader having been killed. So let's listen to a little bit of the president, shall we?
Last night, the United States brought the world's number one terrorist leader to justice. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is dead. He was the founder and leader of ISIS, the most ruthless and violent terror organization anywhere in the world. The United States has been searching for Baghdadi for many years. Capturing or killing Baghdadi has been the top national security priority of my administration. U.S. Special Operations Forces executed a dangerous and daring nighttime raid in northwestern Syria and accomplished their mission in grand style. The U.S. personnel were incredible. I got to watch much of it. No personnel were lost in the operation, while a large number of Baghdadi's fighters and companions were killed with him. He died after running into a dead-end tunnel, whimpering and crying and screaming all the way. The compound had been cleared by this time, with people either surrendering or being shot and killed. 11 young children were moved out of the house and are uninjured. The only ones remaining were Baghdadi in the tunnel, and he had dragged three of his young children with him. They were led to certain death. He reached the end of the tunnel as our dogs chased him down. He ignited his vest, killing himself and the three children. His body was mutilated by the blast. The tunnel had caved in on it in addition, but test results gave certain immediate and totally positive identification. It was him.
It was him, the president announced. Crying and screaming all the way, running down a tunnel, trying to get away as his servants tried to fight off our raiding forces that was never going to end well for them, and no Americans were killed on this mission, so it's doubly awesome. Hell has a bunch of new residents, it turns out, so they can continue to serve al-Baghdadi for all of eternity with red hot pokers up their ass for all I care. Oh, it's wonderful. It was great news. You would think that it would be met with cheers, but it wasn't. We'll get to that in a second. We have more of the president's announcement, so you have more context to the outrage.
The thug who tried so hard to intimidate others spent his last moments in utter fear, in total panic and dread, terrified of the American forces bearing down on him. We were in the compound for approximately 2 hours, and after the mission was accomplished, we took highly sensitive material and information from the raid, much having to do with ISIS, origins, future plans, things that we very much want.
All good news. A good day for the United States of America, right? If you're an average, normal human being, an American citizen, or anywhere in the world, quite frankly, because ISIS was killing everybody, mostly Muslims, you would think this would be celebrated. You would be partially right, depending on the politics of the people. And, by the way, what upset them the most? Because they were very upset. I'll get into a little bit of this, then we'll get into the what upset them the most part in a second, what the president says later. The there was a lot of media liberals and former Obama administration officials. I don't know why you would have former Obama administration officials on your television show to discuss Baghdadi. Barack Obama famously referred to JV as, or ISIS as, the JV team. Remember that? Just because you put on a Lakers uniform doesn't mean Kobe Bryant. You're just the JV team. Well, the JV team grew into a massive army that controlled a large area of the Middle East that we were assured by the Obama administration would be very difficult and take years to take back that space. They didn't even bother trying. I'm not sure they particularly cared all that much. Barack Obama liked to pretend that the terrorism kind of ended on his watch. It didn't. But he didn't care because the American media ate it up and just played along with it. That's part of the reason they lied about Benghazi, remember, during the 2020 campaign. Osama bin Laden is dead and GM is alive. Woohoo! We've done wonders. And then on September 11th, 2012, there was an inconvenient little truth that happened when the Obama campaign was running around bragging about how there hadn't been an attack on Americans in his presidency. The attack on Benghazi, the terror attack, the ISIS-led terror attack in Benghazi happened, killing four Americans, including a United States ambassador. So they tried to pretend that it was a protest about an internet video that nobody watched until some analyst somewhere in the intelligence community found it and said, we can blame this. And it went all the way up the flagpole and they all said, yes, let's blame that, rather than the year's worth of pleas and begging for more security in Benghazi and in Libya because of our failed policy, which was, by the way, led by Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. See, that's why they were so receptive in the media about the story. Well, yesterday, media types, and I'm not going to give them any more publicity than they've already gotten, from Chuck Todd to Jake Tapper to all of their special guests who were the experts, the terrorism experts, had a problem with the way that the president described the raid and the death of al-Baghdadi, because they thought that it would inflame the Islamic world, saying that he died sniveling and crying, and oh no, how dare you speak ill of the dead. One went so far as to talk about how The Trump administration did not show the proper respect to the remains of al-Baghdadi, the way that the Obama administration had paid their respects to Osama bin Laden, making sure that he had a Muslim burial, so on and so forth. Ridiculous. Remember that? Remember that stupidity? They took his body and they took it out to sea and they wrapped it in a sheet and they performed all these ceremonies over it and they did a Muslim burial at sea. And oh, they were making sure that the world knew that they were super duper respectful of the body of one of the most evil human beings to ever live. Why? For the same reasons they were upset yesterday that President Trump talked about what happened during the raid in such frank terms. They were afraid that it would inflame the Muslim world. It could infl- if you found out that they had disrespected Baghdadi's Baghdadi blew himself up. I'm not really sure what kind of respect you're supposed to show a big splatter of goo with three of your kids, because you're like, why not? Why go alone? You know, you got kids. But yeah, as if before this, we were just about to earn the respect and admiration of the radical Islamic Jihad world. But now that we've disrespected the remains of al-Baghdadi by not carefully taking out a dust devil and sucking them all up and putting them in a Ziploc bag and burying it facing toward Mecca, we may have inflamed the rage of the radical Islamic world. Now, they've been blowing themselves up for decades. I don't really think when somebody's already turned their crazy rabid knob up to 11 that you can really go any higher. And quite frankly, if there are moderates in the Middle East out there who, you know, they have a live and let live attitude towards the entire world, but now that they know that a guy who serial raped an American woman, who, by the way, the raid was named after, beheaded people personally, executed, oversaw people, human beings being set on fire, Muslims, by the way, being set on fire and beheaded, and videotaped it all for propaganda purposes. If you're sitting around your house on a Sunday afternoon and just kind of going along to get along, and then you find out that we didn't scoop up this guy's guts and show it the proper respect, and the President of the United States said that he died sniveling and crying, and now suddenly, if that's enough to make you go, well, you know, I did like the live and let live attitude, but instead, now that I know this, I must join a terrorist organization and go out and kill my fellow human beings. If the death of Baghdadi is the straw that broke the camel's back for somebody, their camel had brittle bone disease. There was nothing that was going to stop them from being radicalized. I'm just throwing that out there. I know all the Middle East experts are very, very upset. They think that they can attack the president for being too graphic, for giving too much detail. These are real criticisms. People who are supposed to, you know, seek information. The president should not have been so frank in his discussion with the neighborhood. It could help radicalize many people. They might not think that Baghdadi's body was treated with the respect that, what, he showed it? He was fat to begin with, so he's not really showing himself a whole lot of respect. And he strapped a bomb to himself and blew himself up. So I don't know. I'm not an Islamic scholar, but that strikes me as on the pretty low on the showing your body some respect meter. That's just me. I'm not an irrational lunatic hellbent on destroying innocent people. So when I was watching these shows and reading these tweets, and a lot of this took place on Twitter, I couldn't help but feel sick to my stomach that my fellow Americans, any of them, could think this way. We need to show the proper respect and deference to these people, and otherwise we'll make them mad. Oh, you mean you're afraid of making the people who are going on a 10-year killing spree in the Middle East mad? What might they do then? go on another 10-year killing spree. I think if you're turned off by this, you're already on the other team. And it's better to just get this fight started now, to be perfectly honest with you. But that wasn't even the while that upset them, they were very upset by that. What upset them the most was what the president said in response to a question at the end. See, because unlike Barack Obama, who would come out, and even in the Osama bin Laden raid, Barack Obama didn't take questions. Barack Obama was above questions. He probably didn't have command of the facts in most of these things. So he could come out, read a teleprompter, deliver the lines very well. He was very good at playing the role of president, and he really seemed to love the trappings of the president. He didn't seem to be a big fan of the work of being president, except for the part where ESPN would come in every March and ask for his tournament brackets for the NCAA tournament. But Donald Trump isn't afraid of the press. And what's funny is Barack Obama had no reason to be afraid of the press, unless he was shy or embarrassed for them, which I can't imagine was the case. Whereas Donald Trump recognizes that everybody in the room with a media credential has an out for him. They're trying to get him. They desperately would love to be the one that lays the death blow. Barack Obama just had to worry that somebody's lips would linger too long on his butt cheeks and it would start to get a little awkward at the Christmas party. Whereas Donald Trump has to make sure that none of these people view him as a bigger threat to the world than the guy that just blew himself up in a dead-end tunnel with three of his kids. So let's listen to a portion of the president's Q&A session.
You requested to the Russians to fly over this area they controlled. What did you tell them?
We spoke to the Russians.
What did you tell them?
We told them we're coming in. Okay. And they said, thank you for telling us. They were very good.
But did you tell them why? No,
they did not know why.
Was any other
concern? We did tell them, we think you're going to be very happy. Because, you know, again, they hate ISIS as much as we do. You know what ISIS has done to Russia. So, no, we did not tell. They did not know the mission, but they knew we were going over an area that they had a lot of firepower.
And have you notified the congressional leaders about this, Pelosi?
We've notified some. Others are being notified now as I speak. We were going to notify them last night, but we decided not to do that because Washington leaks like I've never seen before. There's no country in the world that leaks like we do. And Washington is a leaking machine. And I told my people we will not notify them until our great people are out. Not just in, but out. I don't want to have them greeted with firepower like you wouldn't believe. So we were able to get in. It was top secret. It was kept. There were no leaks, no nothing. The only people that knew were the few people that I dealt with.
That part there upset Democrats in and out of the media, in and out of Congress. They were very upset that they were kept in the dark about this raid when they felt that they deserved to know. But you heard the president's rationale right there. The town leaks like a sieve. Can't trust these people. So it was best to keep the circle very small. And that's what he did. And it worked just fine. Still, people in the media, John Harwood, remember John Harwood, CNBC, he was a big hack. He had conspired with the Democrats, as we found out from WikiLeaks, to come up with questions and congratulated himself for really nailing those Republicans while he was moderating a debate because Republicans are stupid and let morons like John Harwood, who are activist liberals with press credentials, moderate Republican debates. He went to his Twitter account and said, quote, Trump didn't give Pelosi advance word, indicating he didn't trust her to keep intel secrets. Pelosi was ranking Dem on intel committee. No evidence in her record raising doubts her handling of sensitive information. Oh, no. How dare he not leak that information, not call Nancy Pelosi. Rob George of the New York Daily News. That Pelosi wasn't informed ahead of time isn't too remarkable. What is? Trump insinuated that if he had, she would have leaked it. compromised mission and endangered American lives, even given impeachment cloud. That's shock. That's a shocking thing to say about congressional leaders. Oh, no. So I feel so sorry for you. Show me on the doll where the president touched you, please. This is the mindset of the left. How dare he not inform everybody what he was about to do? Why? Because loose lips sinks ships. And as we've learned in this bogus impeachment hearing, there are a lot of loose lips out there. Now, John Harwood set about trying to undercut the president's accomplishment here, by the way. He also said, in the American psyche, Baghdadi was to bin Laden as an ant is to an elephant. He just keeps on journalisming, doesn't he? It's great that Baghdadi is gone, he said. Credit to the skill and bravery of U.S. Special Forces. It's very unlikely to influence public opinion much since, A, most Americans don't know who he was, and Trump claimed over and over that he had already obliterated ISIS. I love how journalists talk about how the American people are stupid and ignorant of current events when it's the job of journalists that's supposed to be to inform the American public of such things. So what John Harwood is essentially saying is we're not very good at telling people what's going on in the world. Oh, we'll tell you nonstop about a phone call between the president of Ukraine and the president of the United States, but we will not bother with any kind of information about the rest of the world. Nancy Pelosi's initial statement, quote, "The House must be briefed on this raid, which the Russians, but not top congressional leaders, were notified of in advance, and on the administration's overall strategy in the region." Oh, Nancy, 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 shove it up your butt sideways. And I mean that with all due respect, Madam Speaker. We must be kept in the loop. We must know what's going on. That you aren't trustworthy. Yes, you haven't leaked things on military issues yet, but you have had your allies in the deep state leak transcripts of telephone calls between the president and other world leaders. Maybe you might want to police your own house before you start whining and complaining about how you were kept in the dark. Maybe you should find out why you were kept in the dark. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be a good moment for reflection? Pelosi tweeted, "The death of al-Baghdadi is significant, but it does not mean the death of ISIS. At Real, Donald Trump must present the American people with a clear strategy to confront ISIS." Yes, the American people have every right to know what's going on, according to Democrats, just not on impeachment. That's none of your damn business. Keep your mouth shut. Just take our word for it. We'll leak out all the relevant information. Trust us, trust us, trust us. No, I don't trust you, Nancy. Sorry how that works out, but that's just the way it is. Now, Dana Shell Smith is a real piece of work. She's a former ambassador to Qatar under Barack Obama. She said, quote, "When bin Laden was killed, we were careful to be clear that he had been given a proper Muslim burial, not because we gave a damn about him, but because it was important for our relationships in the region and safety of our military and diplomats." Again, it goes back to what I just said a few minutes ago. If that's your tipping point, if otherwise you had a live and let live attitude and weren't at all interested in killing innocent human beings, but you found out that we didn't scoop up all of Baghdadi's remains and make sure that they were splattered on a wall facing east toward Mecca, I suspect you were going to turn anyway. If that was your deal breaker, I think, you know, well, they killed tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands or millions of Muslims. He oversaw that. He has so much blood on his hands. But did you see the way that the Americans treated his remains that were splattered all around this tunnel? That's it. I'm going to jihad. That's the mentality of the left. That's what happens when you have a blame America first mentality. They don't ever blame America first when it's a Democrat in charge, but when it's a Republican in charge, it's always blame America first. They were very upset, but it's Susan Ferriccio, of the Washington Examiner reminds us, and she's one of the best, if not the best, congressional reporters out there. She tweeted, quote, although Democratic leadership complained they were not briefed on al-Baghdadi, President Obama failed to brief Speaker John Boehner and the GOP when Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl was freed in exchange for five Taliban prisoners. Remember that? The advance briefing was required, but Obama administration officials ignored it. Now, why would they ignore it? Not because they were afraid that information would leak. Nobody was leaking during the Obama years. Everybody was too busy worshiping the ground he walked on. They didn't brief Republicans up on Capitol Hill about it because they would have been pissed that a deserter was being swapped for four terrorist leaders. It was a bad deal, shall we say, to use a term the president would use. So they just kept it secret. They just ignored this. Now, do you remember wall-to-wall coverage about the outrage over Congress not being briefed on this? No, you don't. I'll save you the time. It wasn't bothered with. They didn't bother reporting it. In fact, Susan Ferriccio tweeting it yesterday was the first time I'd even remembered about it since the time of the exchange. It just kind of slipped the mind. It just never, ever got reported. So I didn't even know that they were required to do it. They just didn't because it wasn't politically expedient for them. This is how far up the rear end of the Democratic Party so many of our media are these days. Another reaction to the raid. The White House did what the White House always does. They released a picture of the president. The president was in the Situation Room with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the vice president, a bunch of other people, overseeing, not calling the shots, but overseeing the raid. Peter Souza, I think is how you pronounce his last name. He was the official photographer for Barack Obama while he was president of the United States. I'm surprised. He's a pretty good photographer because he managed to get a bunch of pictures of Barack Obama's face without it being in a mirror or without his own camera phone being stuck in the front of it, taking a picture of himself. So he managed to capture the few candid moments that were out there. He came up with a little conspiracy theory because the left is absolutely insane. He tweeted out, the raid, as reported, took place at 3:30 p.m. Washington time. The photo, as shown on the camera data, was taken at 5:05:24, implying that it was staged. Oh my, they weren't really in the Situation Room at the time. They went back later and decided that they were going to take the photograph after the fact, or maybe they weren't even in the Situation at the time of the raid. He then tweeted, it's entirely possible that the raid was still going on at 5:05 p.m. Before drawing definitive conclusions about the photo, reporters need to nail down the actual timeline of the raid, which is kind of funny because he's already tweeted out to his hundreds of thousands of followers, by the way, conspiracy theory. That original conspiracy theory tweet, the birth of a conspiracy theory tweet, has been retweeted tens of thousands of times. As of this recording at 2 o'clock in the morning, 2:30 in the morning, it is still up and still being retweeted. It will become part of the lore of the Trump administration. There will be people who will say that this photograph was posed for. And then he finds out, oops, later on, a tweet that only has a few hundred retweets compared to tens of thousands of retweets. He tweeted, quote, the latest reporting from the New York Times, the helicopter left Iraq at 5 p.m. Washington time, and they reported it was about a 70-minute flight to Syria. So actual raid had to happen sometime after 6:10 p.m. Therefore, thereby blowing a hole in his own conspiracy theory. But again, it was far too late. The lie had gone around the world 1,000 times. Journalist after journalist started retweeting this and leaving it up still to this day that this staged photograph out there. David Axelrod, Barack Obama's brain, even went so far as to retweet it in the evening, well into the night when the truth was known. Why? Because truth doesn't matter anymore. Agenda matters. This is how conspiracy theories get. Now, I wonder if any of the PolitiFacts or the Snopes of the world will bother to fact check this conspiracy. I highly doubt it. And if they do, it will likely be the most favorable way humanly possible. Why? Because the media are the enemy of the people, as the president says. And he's absolutely right. The original, I still happen to have it open on my computer. The Washington Post had a story, an obituary, about al-Baghdadi. Their headline, their original headline, was not what I'm about to read you. They had a different one. At first, it's kind of funny, they had to change it a couple of times. It shouldn't be that hard. Their original headline, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, Islamic State's terrorist in chief, dies at 48. Okay, dry, but it's right to the point and the fact. Then for some weird reason, known only to the editors at the Washington Post and kept secret by them, that headline was changed to, quote, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, austere religious scholar at helm of Islamic State, dies at 48. That's a hell of a shift. There's no reason given for the change whatsoever, because why would they give a reason for it? The realistic reason was they want to downplay who this monster was and what he did in every way possible to make it seem like less of a big deal, because it helps Donald Trump. And they don't want to help Donald Trump. I don't think there was a conscious meeting at the Washington Post where they said, we've got to find a way to tone this down so Donald Trump doesn't, you know, so some people don't think that Donald Trump did something good here. We got to find a way to fool him with the headline. I just think it's so ingrained in them that it just comes naturally. Well, after outrage in a few hours, the Washington Post then changed their headline a third time, because third time's a charm, right? Their new headline, the one they've settled on, at least for now, is Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, extremist leader of Islamic State, dies at 48. Isn't that nice? He's the extremist leader. They finally get around. Extremist leader of, he's a terrorist. He's a horrible, horrible, awful human being, a monster, one of history's greatest. And now they finally, on the third try, kind of got it right. Then you have, what is her name? Christine Karati, K-O-R-A-T-T-I. Christine Karati Kelly. She is Vice President for Communications and General Manager at the Washington Post Live, the Post's live news event platform. She tweeted out, quote, regarding our al-Baghdadi obituary, the headline should have read the headline should have never read that way, and we changed it quickly. She didn't change it quickly. She didn't say who wrote it. They won't say who wrote it. They won't say how it was changed from the original headline, which was factually accurate and dry, to a glowing, loving headline. But it was. We have all the screen captures and all the proof that anybody could need. And they won't explain themselves, because they won't explain themselves. They don't feel the need to explain themselves. Liberals never, ever have to explain themselves, because who's going to hold them accountable? Some other journalist going to come up and ask the Washington Post for an explanation? Hell no, they're not going to. They're on the same team. And if you read down in the obituary of al-Baghdadi in the Washington Post, you get a sort of a weird portrait of a serial killer. There's a little bit of a fandom in there. Quote, from his teens, he was fascinated with Islamic history and the intricacies of Islamic law. Acquaintances would remember him as a shy, nearsighted youth who liked soccer, but preferred to spend his free time at the local mosque. Isn't that lovely? He loved his children. He loved his children to death. They don't write that, but they should, because that's really who this monster was. He wasn't a smoker, but he was quite handy with matches while setting his fellow human beings on fire. Is it not sickening the way that these people portrayed this whole incident? It should just be a recitation of facts. Now, many Democrats were wondering and worrying on television yesterday that the president might try to exploit this for political purposes, and they were very concerned and reminding the American people that the president himself did not do this raid. He just sat back and watched as the military did it. So don't give credit to the President of the United States for anything, because in fact it was our men and women in the military, I suspect men in the military, who did this. And I'm a horrible sexist for even mentioning that fact. But this is Nancy Pelosi's statement, okay? Quote, "Americans salute the heroism, dedication, and skill of our military and intelligence professionals and acknowledge the work of our partners in the region. We are relieved that no U.S. personnel died during the raid." End quote. Let's go in the Wayback Machine back to after the Osama bin Laden raid. Here is Nancy Pelosi's statement at that point. Quote, "The death of Osama bin Laden marks the most significant development in our fight against al-Qaeda. I salute President Obama, his national security team, Director Panetta, and our men and women in the intelligence community and military." Isn't that nice? She throws in the military and the people who actually did the raid at the end, but mentions Obama, the national security team, and Leon Panetta first, because she knows which butt she has to kiss. Yet when it's Donald Trump, her statement contains no reference to the President of the United States. Now, who's politicizing this again? Who should we be worried about politicizing this raid? If you remember, and this is kind of funny and sickening, it annoyed me at the time, I remember it plainly. After the Osama bin Laden raid, there was a phrase that came into being. It was very popular in the media and on the left, but I repeat myself. It was gutsy call. Remember that, gutsy call? They even set up gutsycall.com, Democrats did, that would lead people directly to barackobama.com to donate campaign money. The White House was calling it a gutsy call. The media was calling it a gutsy call. There was no outrage about Barack Obama politicizing it. There was no fear that Barack Obama was politicizing the raid. It's kind of weird, isn't it? Yet they were politicizing the raid, and you know what? They did it. So, you know, that's fine. I don't have a problem with it. I do have a problem with the idea that it was a gutsy call, because what else was Barack Obama supposed to do? Honestly, think about it. If it came out that we knew where Osama bin Laden was and Barack Obama did not authorize a raid to go in and capture or kill him, that would have been it for Barack Obama. All the hero worship in the world wouldn't have saved him from that, especially if Osama bin Laden had gotten away while Barack Obama farted around and decided whether or not to go forward with the raid. That was not a gutsy call. It was a self-preservation call, which, by the way, it's a call that Joe Biden advised against. If you read former Secretary of Defense under Obama, Bill Gates's book, Joe Biden advised against the bin Laden raid. Actually, I think that Joe Biden has admitted to it himself. That's how horrible of a candidate he is. But it was such a gutsy call. It was so risky, so amazing. Yet Donald Trump, similar situation, hostile territory. He is criticized for not telling Democrats. He is criticized for attempting to politicize this. He is criticized for not taking proper respect with the splatted guts of the guy. It is a completely different standard. It's weird. Oh, by the way, he's also criticized, in addition to not telling Democrats, he told Russia, as you heard in that thing. Well, this is another sign of just how close and deferential Donald Trump is to Vladimir Putin, Well, no, you heard the president explain it. That's why I haven't addressed it. You heard the president explain it. Russia has a lot of military assets in that area. We were going to be flying over them. If they don't know who we are and all our beacons are off and we're running on silent mode and running really low so nobody can see us coming, if the Russians see that fly overhead, you never know how they're going to react. Maybe they'll start shooting at it. So you have to tell them, look, we're going to be flying over you. Let us go or there's going to be hell to pay. And there's, okay, go ahead. Where are you going? None of your business. But we are going to be flying over you and let it happen. That's why they let Russia know and not Democrats. The fear of leaks and the fear of getting our soldiers killed. Neither happened because the right steps were taken in both cases. Okay, I want to move on for a bit here because there's a couple of other things I want to get to before we run out of time. Adam Schiff was on This Week with George Stephanopoulos, who doesn't seem to host the show anymore. He's getting a giant fat check, but Martha Raddatz seems to spend more time in that chair than he does, but his name still remains on the show. And my jaw hit the floor when I was listening to this. He's the least self-aware person. Martha Raddatz actually kind of calls him out at the end of this clip you're about to hear. But everything you're about to hear Adam Schiff say is exactly what Democrats are doing. It doesn't require that much setup. I don't want to oversell it. I think it's hilarious and frightening simultaneously, and I give kudos, and I don't give kudos often to any journalists, and she's generally awful, but every once in a while, a stopped clock is right twice a day. She gets it right, and she manages to point out something to Adam Schiff that he can't really dispute and doesn't really have much of an answer for.
These investigations, and I want to start with a new one. The Justice Department has shifted its review of the 2016 Russia probe to what they call a criminal investigation. You've said that you have had, quote, profound concerns that the move means that Attorney General William Barr's Justice Department has become what you call a vehicle for President Trump's political revenge. What makes you draw that conclusion?
Well, if these reports are correct, and now Bill Barr's Justice Department is doing a criminal investigation of people who properly looked into Russian interference in our election in the FBI or in the intelligence agencies, it means that Bill Barr, on the president's behalf, is weaponizing the Justice Department to go after the president's enemies. I served for years, I don't anymore, on a commission that would help emerging democracies. And we would always inform the parliamentarians in these democracies, when you win an election, you don't seek to just prosecute the losing side. But this is what Bill Barr is seeking to do. He is demonstrating once again that he is merely a tool of the president's hand, not the representative of the American people.
I want to stop it right there for a second. That is exactly what the Democrats are doing in Congress. That it's partisan. They've weaponized Congress. They've weaponized their chairmanships in these committees. There is no evidence to go after. They're just going after anything to see if they can find evidence of anything. It doesn't matter. It's all being done in secret. So if they dig a well that is dry, they don't face any embarrassment or blowback or the American people going, wait a second, you keep finding nothing. How about you get back to our business rather than your business? Nope. It's everything right there. Adam Schiff is accusing Bill Barr of doing to the Justice Department. He has done, and his fellow travelers in the Democratic Party have done to Congress. A Republican could say what he just said right there, and it would be absolutely true. And this is what Democrats do all the time. They're always guilty of what they accuse the other side of doing. Always guilty of what they're accusing the other side of doing. Martha Raddatz doesn't really call him out on that. She points out the fact that John Dunham is a widely respected guy. And John Dunham will remain a widely respected guy unless and until he finds criminal wrongdoing on behalf of anybody with a D after their name, and then he will become public enemy number one, and they'll dig up something from his junior high yearbook about how he once voted for a Republican and therefore he's biased and cannot be trusted. The hypocrisy is staggering. This investigation, we're just trying to figure out what's going on. I fear that this is being politicized. He's trying to discredit one of our institutions. Now, I thought that doing so as an elected official was a threat to the Republic. I thought it was a horrible affront to the America that we all know and love. It is when Donald Trump does it. Somehow it's not when Adam Schiff does it. He continue, or Raddatz and him continue.
The prosecutor running the investigation, John Durham, is a very well-respected prosecutor. Why not just let the investigation run its course?
Well, first of all, we have an inspector general who is an independent body who is doing an investigation that's near conclusion. So there's been no public explanation for why this needs to be a criminal probe. But look, you can assign good
people. Would you accept the results of such an investigation?
Well, I was going to say, you can assign good people to do an illegitimate investigation. You can assign good people to investigate the president's political rivals. It doesn't mean that the investigation is any less tainted. This is tainted because of the motivation, which is a political one, to serve the president's political interests.
Okay, you have no evidence of that yet whatsoever, however.
Well, the evidence, I think, is pretty clear.
Well, the evidence, I think, is pretty clear. What more do you want? The president said that there should be an investigation, and now there's an investigation. Therefore, it is clearly political. Really, because Democrats have been calling for impeachment since the election in 2016. How is that not political? How is what you're doing not political? There's an inspector general investigation, so we don't even know why this was. Will you accept that this is legitimate? No, I won't. I just won't do it. The inspector general has no ability to charge anybody with any wrongdoing. He can recommend charges, but he has no ability to bring charges himself. And according to published reports, part of the reason why it has come to this and why this Durham investigation, which was a probe, has turned into a criminal investigation is because the inspector general managed to find some things that would warrant a criminal investigation. See, Adam Schiff has no interest in this. He again goes back to the essential talking point of the Democratic Party that this is partisan, this is just a witch hunt, this is who they are, this is how they are, don't worry about it, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, do not even ask any questions of your government overlords. Who do you think you are? We are your betters. Do what we're told. It's the whole left-wing progressive mindset. But something interesting happened the other day on CNN. They had James Clapper. Remember James Clapper? James Clapper was on there talking to Jim Sciutto, a so-called journalist who just happens to have been a former political appointee of the Obama administration. It's amazing. You hear the bald Avenger, Brian Stelter, the human potato, lament constantly all the people who've gone from Fox News to the Trump administration. And it's an outrage. And they keep going into the Trump administration from Fox News and this revolving door over there. Meanwhile, a good 70% of his colleagues have some kind of tie to a Democrat. Half of those people have a tie directly to the Obama administration. That doesn't bother the human potato at all. It's just the ties to the Trump administration and Fox News that are the problem, according to him. Well, Jim Sciutto and James Clapper were talking, and James Clapper accidentally says something here. It's kind of funny. Listen to this clip. Listen to it play out. And at the end, James Clapper kind of basically says we were only following orders when it came to spying on the Trump campaign, that we did it and how we did it. Sounds to me like maybe Jim Clapper is trying to say, look, I was only doing what I was told. Don't blame me for violating anybody's civil rights. Don't blame me for lying to any FISA court. That was above my pay grade. All I was doing was following orders. It's funny when you know history. It's funnier when you know that this caused a bit of a panic amongst the people who have a reason to panic when it comes to the origins of the Russia hoax. Listen to Jimmy Clapper here.
You know, the president now has sitting members of this government. You have the attorney general traveling the world now, meeting with U.S. intelligence partners. trying to find out, in his view, whether they participated in some sort of Obama administration-led effort to undermine President Trump in the last election here. You also know that John Durham, who is a former prosecutor, senior Justice Department official, he's pursuing his own investigation on the origins of that probe. Are you concerned that Barr's or Durham's investigation will find wrongdoing and seek to punish former intelligence officials?
Well, I don't know. I don't think there was any wrongdoing. I think at the time all of us were trying to navigate a very, very difficult, politically fraught, highly charged situation. I know for my part, my main concern was the Russians and the threat posed by the Russians to our very political fabric. And the message I'm getting from all this is apparently what we were supposed to have done was to ignore the Russian interference, ignore the Russian meddling and the threat that it poses to us. And oh, by the way, blown off what the then Commander-in-Chief, the President Obama, told us to do, which was to assemble all the reporting that we could, that we had available to us, and put it in one report that the President could pass on to the Congress and to the next administration. And while we're at it, declassify as much as we possibly could to make it public. And and that's what we did. It's kind of disconcerting now to be investigated for, you know, having done our duty and done what we were told to do by the President.
We were only doing our duty and done what we were ordered to do by the President of the United States. Huh, it's weird. See, don't blame me, man. I was only following orders, man. I wasn't even in town that month. I don't know what's going on. Leave me alone. Please be nice to me. Someone reach out. I'm perfectly willing to flip. That last part might be a bit much, but it's the gist of it. Democrats are very, very worried about this investigation for some weird reason, so much so that yesterday evening, 6:02 p.m., Senator Dianne Feinstein tweeted a letter that, quote, here's what she wrote in her tweet, quote, Senate Judiciary Committee Democrats have called on Attorney General Barr to recuse himself from matters related to Ukraine because of concerns about his role in President Trump's effort to damage a political opponent and undermine the Russia investigation. They want Barr to recuse himself now. They demand it. Democrats do. They're supposed to be, they should be, you know, calling for hearings themselves. If they're so concerned about all these things they say they're so concerned about, then the origins of how these things came to be, since everything that they've tried and hunted down and every path they've gone down related to the Russia hoax has been nothing, you'd think they'd go, well, all right, we need to find out how this whole mess started. But they're not interested in that. They want Barr to recuse himself. It's not going to happen, but it's telling that they're panicking this way. In an update to a story I told you about last week, remember Congresswoman Katie Hill from California? She was in the three-way relationship with her husband and their girlfriend, I guess, who was a campaign staffer and allegedly another House staffer. Well, she's resigned. Well, she's resigning. She's announced her resignation. She released a letter, quote, It is with a broken heart today that I announce my resignation from Congress. This is the hardest thing I have ever had to do, but I believe it is the best thing for my constituents, my community, and our country. This is what needs to happen so that the good people who supported me will no longer be subjected to the pain inflicted by my abusive husband and the brutality of hateful political operatives who seem to happily provide a platform to a monster who is driving a smear campaign built around cyber exploitation. She's claiming that it's revenge porn, that she has a lot of naked pictures with one of her ex-girlfriends who was on her campaign staff. And other one, she's still trying to deny that she was sleeping with a congressional staffer, which is a violation of a law that Congress passed. She's being painted as a victim of a mean, old, vindictive husband. But it's There's footage. I mean, there's not footage. There probably is footage. She said that she's stepping down because she doesn't know what else will come out otherwise, which means she knows exactly what else there is out there. And I imagine it involves video. Democrats are very upset to see her go. But if we just go back not that long ago, February 6, 2018, Washington Post headline, House prohibits sexual relationships between lawmakers and their staffs. This was heralded at the time. Big bipartisan piece of legislation. It says you can't bang your staffers, which makes sense, especially in the era of Me Too. You're the boss. What is your staffer supposed to say? I don't want to bang you. All right, then go find another job. The Washington Post wrote at the time, now they're portraying Hill as a victim of revenge porn, quote, the bipartisan bills are Congress's most definitive response to the Me Too campaign and the wave of harassment and misconduct scandals that have led to at least 8 members resigning or announcing plans to retire in the past 4 months. Amid a national reckoning over sexual misbehavior in the workplace, news reports exposing lawmakers' secretive process for settling harassment complaints with taxpayer dollars pushed House leadership to confront criticisms of the system. Quote, and this is from an interesting person, quote, with this bill, we are shining a blazing light on the scourge of workplace abuse, which has been allowed to fester in the shadows for too long, end quote, Nancy Pelosi. Oh, so Nancy Pelosi was all in favor of this. Now she's very upset to see Hill go. She's expected to officially leave at the end of the week. And all I can tell you is that her going away party is going to be lit. It's going to be crazy. Be off the chain. Anyway, God, I love these hypocrites. Tomorrow on the show, I want to get into this New Mexico making college tuition free. But then the people, the liberal activist students, are pissed off that it's being funded by oil money because you'll never be woke enough. That'll just have to wait till tomorrow. The personal bit of business that I wanted to announce is that starting next Monday, November 4th, 2019, I have accepted an offer for a job at WCBM Radio in Baltimore, in Maryland. It's the conservative talk station in the state. It's awesome. Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin are on the station. And I will be on there live 5 days a week from 9 a.m. till noon. I'll leave right up to Rush. So if you don't get enough of me 1 hour interrupted, you can have 3 hours of me interrupted on real radio or online at WCBM.com. Very excited to do that. This show will not change. This show will continue as is, as promised. So fear not. This isn't going anywhere. I love doing this, and it'll help me prepare for that. So it's awesome. To those of you who have already sent me messages, because somehow you found out that they went public with it. I've known for like a month, but I haven't been able to say anything. Because out of respect for the guy who's leaving the station, he's a legend in the radio business, 81 years old, and I think most of that time, his adult life, 50 years, I think, has been in radio. Amazing, amazing career. But, yeah, he's leaving the morning show. The guy who was doing 9 to noon is moving to the morning show, and I'm doing 9 to noon. Unabashed conservatism returns to the airwaves in Maryland. And the good thing is that I won't have to answer to a bunch of corporate suits who are afraid that I'll be too conservative or that I might offend some of the state's Democrats that they desperately want to have access to. Yeah, well, the other station can have the squishy middle. I'm not interested in that. Anyway, thank you for listening, sharing, telling a friend, doing all that stuff, rating and reviewing and all those things. You guys rock. I wouldn't be at this point, and I wouldn't have this offer if it weren't for you guys listening to me every day as it is, sitting on my couch in the basement. I just get to do it over the airwaves as well soon. Oh, it's Monday. Is it wrong that I'm already missing the weekend? I want another weekend. probably. Anyway, you can email me, Derek at dailycaller.com. If you want to win a copy of Jared Stepman's book, email that address, and whatever else you got, send it my way. I'll see you back here tomorrow.
It's kind of disconcerting now to be investigated for, you know, having done our duty and done what we were told to do by the president.